Aaron Judge hit the ball so high you wondered. It came down in Monument Park. It's a Judgian blast. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
Yankees win. Yankees win. Yankees win. Yep. The Yankees won. And Aaron Judge hit a home run. And John Sterling had the home run call. And that is your home run call of the day. Your baseball isn't boring. Home run call of the day. What a way to start the day, right? At BB isn't boring. At BB isn't boring. Thank you so much to Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage, Wasabi Technologies, for walking side by side with us. Thank you, Producer Evan, for doing all that you do. And thank you for you, the listener, and you, the follower of Baseball Isn't Boring. Well, as we said, Yankees win. Yankees go up 2-0 on the Cleveland Guardians. We had a big, big day on the podcast. A lot of Cleveland Guardian stuff. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to have much more of the Cleveland Guardians to talk about heading through the rest of the postseason. But you never know. The gritty, gutty Cleveland Guardians, who knows? The Yankees, everything seems to be coming up Yankees lately. All the things that they were hoping would happen are happening. And what's that leading to? Just cruising through the playoffs. But wherever they get to, they're going to have to play a really, really, really good team in the World Series if they beat the Cleveland Guardians. But they're going to have to play a really, really good team. And that is the Mets. That is the Dodgers. And that series is where we are at. We are Baseball Isn't Boring, boots on the ground, Baseball Isn't Boring Roadshow in New York, talking to Mets, talking to Dodgers, talking to all the people in and around the spiciest series, let's just be honest, the spiciest series of the postseason that isn't the Dodgers and the Padres. I think that one so far may be the spiciest, but still, this one is a good one. Tied 1-1 at Citi Field. So I get a chance to go to the workout, catch up with a lot of familiar faces, a lot of people who've been on the podcast, but if they're on the podcast and they're good and they're podcastable and they're interesting and entertaining and insightful, the big three of Baseball Isn't Boring, then coming back on. A lot of members of the Baseball Isn't Boring family in this series. We're going to be rolling them out over the next couple days. But today is the evolution of Michael Kopech. Michael Kopech, of course, got traded to the Dodgers, the trade deadline for the Chicago White Sox. Oh my goodness. What a blessing for him. But he has made the absolute most of it. Absolutely dominant with the Dodgers. 1.13 ERA. Became the closer. And now, in the postseason, again, pretty dominant. Has pitched four times. Pitched four times in that San Diego series. And only gave up one hit in 3 1/3 innings. 5 strikeouts. And in case you missed it, that last game, the game 5, 102 miles an hour. 102 miles an hour. And so when you throw 102 miles an hour, that is how you are going to get a podcast kicked off. That is what I want to know. I want to know what it's like to throw 102 miles an hour in a postseason game. And that's exactly what Michael Kopech answers. Great stuff. And then on top of all of it, we have on friend of the program, John Gibbons. John Gibbons, bench coach for the Mets. What's it like to be a bench coach in the National League Championship Series? And also his take on what has become the talk of the town when it comes to all these postseason games, bullpen games. And predictable, John Gibbons, old school, likes to see the starters do their thing third time through the order. And he says it in the pure John Gibbons way. Remember his quote from the great Frank Howard: if you have the most cannons, you're probably going to win. This series, I don't know. I don't know who has the most cannons. The Dodgers have the bigger cannons, but do they have the most? I don't know. I know that we have the most cannons of any podcast. Today is a perfect example. So first, I'm going to give you Michael Kopech, pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And then we are talking to John Gibbons, bench coach of the New York Mets. So rate, review, subscribe. Thank you, everybody, for being part of the Baseball is a Boring family. First off, here's Kopech.
As I've said before, there's no human being I'd rather be talking to than Michael Kopech.
Appreciate it.
It's always good to see you. It's good to see you throwing 102 miles an hour in a playoff game. As someone who has never done that, it's going to come as a surprise. Now, you've thrown 102 before.
Yeah, well, I was younger, but yeah.
Yeah. What was the hardest you've ever thrown?
So, I don't know if it was TrackMan official or anything like that, but in 2016, when I was with the Red Sox organization in Salem, I had hit 105.
You did?
That was what was reported to me.
Listen.
Like, I don't know how accurate that is, and tails grow and grow, but that's what was reported to me.
You did. They used to do the running thing, too, where you threw like 110.
The running gun, I did that, yeah. But that was with a lighter ball.
Oh, was? Well, yeah. I don't know how these things. All I see is the numbers. But I've never thrown 102 anywhere, but especially in a postseason game. So, and neither had you, right?
Right.
It's so. How does it hit different? Like, in Azir is how many miles per hour do you think it is because it is a post? Like, you try to say it's just a game, but man, it is. It feels. It looks something other than just a game.
Yeah. So, I think. So I've hit 102 a couple other times throughout the season this year. But truthfully, those were points in the season where I was either like fresh off of some rest or like was early and I felt really good. And truthfully, and this isn't just me saying this right now, like it's just the shape that everybody's in.
Yeah, the postseason. Yeah.
Everybody's got some ailments.
Yeah,
everybody's
sure.
Banged up a little bit. It's been a long year. So I would say that, like, if that wasn't a postseason game, I might be touching 99.
So, but that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So like, there's a little bit of level, like, extra adrenaline that, like, you get through some of that. Like, you don't notice the soreness until the minute you're done pitching, and then all of it hits you. But yeah, I think that's just the adrenaline in postseason.
So you haven't not done it. Did you expect that? Like, you watch it on TV, you know, did you expect
kinda
that?
Kinda. I mean, not necessarily expect 102. I expected some adrenaline boost for sure. I pitched in one postseason before in 21,
right.
And I got a little bit of that then. I think that for the most of that year, I'd been getting up to about 98, 99, maybe touching 100, and then I touched 101 in the postseason. And so it was similar to that.
Was it different at all?
Yeah, it just feels different. Like, you don't really, you can feel the rhythm and the timing of your body, but you don't feel specific, like, tight spots or anything like that. It's kind of a blur, honestly, and I don't know if I can exactly put it into words. Like, this is my second postseason. I know we got guys on this team that have had over a decade of postseasons, so. I'm still getting used to it.
But it's honest. I'm saying it's cool.
Yeah.
Of course, it's cool. But this is the reaction is there's the performance and even the reaction of
for
like
sure.
Right and you know the one of the unnamed players on this team who wears a baseball's and boring Japanese shirt everywhere. I mean, he has this moment where he strikes out the side in 2018 in the World Series and comes off and he's like, "Fuck yeah," you know, right?
Yeah.
But that's sort of like. You could say that is like it seems like that is how it feels encapsulates how it feels right? Was that how it felt? I don't know if you said that, but
I mean I said something probably similar.
Yeah.
For me, I pitch a little bit more with my emotions on my sleeve than the guy that we all know you're talking about.
Yeah.
He does a great job of not letting it, you know, boil over. And if he does show emotion, you know it's a really big moment. I do a little bit more of wearing my emotions on my sleeve when I pitch. Not necessarily like ride with the ups and downs, but if I get excited, I'll be excited, you know?
Yeah.
And then in the postseason, there's just that much more adrenaline, that much more excitement. It's really easy to let it out for me.
Well, that's good though.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's all. I mean, it's good anytime. Just being honest with you.
Yeah, I enjoy enjoying the moments. I think it's the best way to put it.
Have you always been though? I mean.
I think for a long time, I was.
Yeah.
And then past couple years, I've battled with myself about like not wanting to get too up or too down, which I think is still valid.
Is that because you're starting?
Yeah, a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like the... I think that it's okay to be excited when something exciting happens, even as a starter. I think we saw it quite a bit with guys that were pitching really well this year. Crochet comes to mind because I spent a lot of time in Chicago. He'll let out some excitement when he's out there dominating, and he doesn't necessarily hold it in until it's done.
Yeah.
And then we saw the same thing with Scooble this postseason.
Yeah.
And those two guys are dominating and they're rolling, and I think it's okay to enjoy the game while you're playing the game.
When you were in high school, were you that way?
Oh, and yeah.
Really?
I was probably a little more vocal then.
You talked crap.
Yeah,
like
I was a little chirpy.
Were you?
I was a little, excuse my language, I was a little bit of a shithead.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Who wasn't in high school, really?
But, I'm not that way anymore, but I'm not embarrassed to get excited, for sure.
No, but it's good. But it's also, like, to understand, like you said, the evolution of you, like the evolution of emotions. I mean, emotions in every part of life. This is, I think, one of the things that probably you'd say this has really helped you bobbing and weaving until you sort of lock in, okay, this is what will work best for me, right?
Yeah. And I think it may not be that. I don't want to say it's an unhealthy way to look at a game. I'll just say what I'm thinking, though. Like, I think a lot of guys use this game as their outlet, their therapy, if you want to call it that. And I've done that. You know, the traumas that we navigate individually in our lives are, you know, everybody's got their own story. Mm-hmm. So we deal with that, and, you know, when we come here, this is where we are able to let everything out. And pitching and competing, I think a lot of us is so just ingrained in who we are at this point. Not that it's our identity, so to speak, but we've navigated a life around competing on the baseball field. So when we do that, and we're able to do that to the highest level, I don't think there's anything as relieving as that, other than getting to hang it up when the day is over and go home to your family. You know what I mean? So it's like those are the two outlets that I have, and to be able to use that as freely as possible means a lot to me. So in the past, when I had kind of like tried to cap my emotions and not let them get too high, just so I wouldn't get too low if I didn't bounce back or whatever, like I'm glad that I've kind of like freed myself up from that a little bit.
Maybe this is when you can't, I don't know, but when was that turning point for you? Was there a turning point for you?
I think it evolved over the course of this season, being back in the bullpen. I don't think it was strictly from being in the bullpen, but to be honest, like I came into this season expecting to be a starter, and I worked really hard to do that. And when that opportunity was taken away from me in spring training, I wasn't ready to let go of it, so I had a lot of bitterness throughout the first couple weeks of the season, couple months of the season maybe even. And then I realized I could go out there and just really play to my strengths, which was a learning curve on its own, but what I've always liked to do is throw hard.
You didn't have to save those bullets, you know,
at the start. Just got to go out there and honestly, I think guys shy away from saying this, but I'll just say it. I got to go out there and throw as hard as I could every pitch.
Yeah.
And when I was able to do that and kind of freed myself up to just throw hard in the strike zone, I think it made me more of myself on the mound. That's who I am. I have one throttle and I gear it up and I go. Now I needed to mix pitches and throw sliders and what have you. That was a learning curve throughout the season, but that was for the most part just getting freed up.
Can I not to play like amateur psychologist, but it must have made you feel good overall. Like it must have made you, when you accepted that, when you got that feeling and you're good at it, and then like it was like you just said, this is, like it or not, this is sort of this whole deal is all encompassing for us, right?
For sure.
So,
for sure.
But it must, in other words, it must have made you happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. like I said, when I let go of that bitterness of not being a starter anymore and going back to just being who I was as an amateur baseball player, what got me here was that I have a strong arm. That's not the case for everybody, but that's what got me drafted, that's what got me signed, that's what got me to professional baseball, mm-hmm. and ultimately it's probably what got me to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. So to kind of find that again and compete with that very tool, yeah, it made me feel really good.
Another thing, going back to the unnamed player, which we will now name as Joe Kelly.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, when I saw you guys in Miami, we were talking about this, about getting like the playoffs, and his record in the playoffs is really, really good. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because he's able to sort of like, he's like, well, big moment. It's not a big moment. It's not. And a lot of guys say that.
Yeah.
But I think there is that mentality of being able to hey, I'm on the mound, I'm pitching. He says, you know, and I've seen him pitch in the postseason. It's like literally it's just a mindset of whatever. Like, and that's a hard place to get to.
For sure. Yeah. And him and I have talked about that actually before we got to the postseason. We know we were going to be in the playoffs this year, and so I talked to him leading up to this, and that's how he approaches every game, is that he just, like, it's almost like he doesn't care, but it's not that he's...
No, that's
like,
exactly what he said. He's like, yeah.
But at the same time, like, he's competing, so I think not caring may not be the best way to put it, but like he goes out there and he doesn't treat it like it's bigger than life, like, which I think a lot of people can do, and with everything around it, I think they can put that on the game. But at the end of the day, like, whatever the outside of it is, whatever you're playing, whatever that game means or you're playing for, it comes down to the game within the game, which is competing against the guy in the box.
Yeah.
And every single game, I think, if we're able to compete with the guy in the box and just not have anything slip in, like, this guy's better than me or whatever, anything like that, like, you're competing to the best of your ability. And if you're doing that, it's going to show up on the biggest stage.
Right. And it doesn't – I mean, did it – having now done it a couple – how many times you've pitched in the postseason? Three?
So I got 4 out of 5 in the division series, and then I had a couple back in 21.
Okay, so – The thing that we started this whole thing off, throwing 102, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, like, okay, well, that was the evolution of you in the postseason.
For sure.
So I would imagine that felt different, like, that you have taken, whether it's Joe's advice, whether experience and everything, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm getting a handle on this postseason thing.
For sure. And it's like, it's not worrying about judgment in the game either.
Yeah, that's like, another big thing, right?
Yeah. Like, I think Joe's the best at that. I think Joe is the best in baseball at not giving a damn about what other people think about him.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that as the highest compliment, because like it's one of the hardest things to do in this game. What freed me up my last game was that I had to warm up on the field in front of 50,000 people. And I sailed the ball to the backstop. I was like, oh, I can embarrass myself and then pitch. You know what I mean? Like, if I just did that, which is like the most embarrassing thing I feel like I could do, is yip a ball in front of 53,000 people. Then I can pitch in front of 53,000 people or whatever it was.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? And that's what you did.
Yeah, so yeah. That to me, it's like getting away from the judgment, freeing yourself up from judgment, and then being able to just do what you have to do.
It's funny you say that, though, because it's... It's we talk about the book, his book, writing a book.
Yeah.
You don't write a book unless you don't give a shit.
Yeah,
while you're
honestly.
Playing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. I hadn't even thought about that, but it's very true.
There's a reason why active players don't write books.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and you know what happened? Nothing bad. Only good.
Yeah, for
only
sure.
Good. And so when you understand that, it's like, just like, it's all going to be good.
Yeah.
So.
Which is, I think says a lot, and I do the same thing, but says a lot about him, like, not being on social media and stuff. It's like, I don't think he's running from anything, but it's just like, who cares what anybody has to say about what you're doing? Like, you know what your job is, you know if you're good at it or not, and then you can go out there and execute. Mm-hmm. Like, judgment's going to happen, whether we like it or not. We don't have to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's all good things.
Yeah, for sure.
I hope this is getting ready.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a good conversation. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Listen, we're both human, so thanks, man.
Yeah, of course.
It's a time-honored tradition. John Gibbons back. Part of the Baseballs and Boring family. Congratulations. I feel like this is good luck you doing, you talking to
us. Hey, Rob,
us.
You are good luck. Because, you've been around winners your whole life, man, up there in Beantown.
Yeah.
You might have brought a little of that to us yourself.
Wherever I go, it's good luck. Just ask my wife.
Yeah.
But in all sincerity, it's been fun watching you, like, draped over the rail here.
Half asleep?
Not half asleep. Like, again, I just told you, the straw that stirs a drink when it comes to this Mets team. We've talked about the wild ride. We talked in Philadelphia,
right.
But now, like, as we get here, besides being exhausted, how do you feel?
You know, Rob, I feel great. Obviously, you know, the travel lately, and we've been on the road forever, and then we came home, and then we went back out to Cal and here. You know, it's probably affected me more than the youngsters. You know, those older guys, but. You know, there's still that adrenaline I'm feeling.
Are you good?
Yeah, you know, just being a part of this and watching these guys. You know, the more you watch them, the longer the season goes, you realize how special this group really is. You know, and regardless of how it finishes up, right? There's just something they after a rough start, they came together and stayed strong, held tough, and heck, you know, and they got on a nice little roll. You know, once we hit it's summertime you know, we feel we got a shot to win this whole thing.
Yeah, Carlos had said, it's like, you know, we always get up, we get hit in the face, and we get up. Going to the game, too, in Los Angeles, did you feel that way? Well, you've been around them long enough, so you get a sense of pretty much how you guys are going to respond, right?
Yeah, we know, Rob, that's almost like a typical game out there. You know, we were walking guys in three walks in the first inning, and they took the lead, and you know, that's kind of the game, the way it works anytime during the season. You know, if you don't throw strikes, you know, next thing you know, you're getting beat up pretty good. And then, and then I think we just kind of wash that off.
Did you? Not easy to do, though, for a lot of teams.
No, you're right. But, you know, I guess that's the beauty of a seven-game series instead of a five, too. You know, you always got a game or two to play with. You know, you don't want to be careless with that, but, you know, you do. And then, of course, obviously, the big, everybody says, the momentum's always depending on the next day starter, right?
Yeah.
And we had our top guy.
Well, you can't say that anymore because the starter's always going like an inning. It's like there's more relief pitchers than starters.
Well, not for us, though. I mean, that's the thing we do.
That's what I'm giving, in all sincerity. That's why I actually like your guys' chances, because I am a big proponent of the more guys you have like that, the better you are. I think the bullpen stuff catches up to you.
I agree. You know, Rob, in reality, you know, it's almost embarrassing in Major League Baseball. I can see it sometimes in the minor leagues where your numbers are limited. In Major League Baseball, even in this round, and I think even last year in the World Series, Texas and Arizona in one game, both teams threw bullpens, I think. That's almost embarrassing in Major League Baseball. You have to do that. You can't find enough guys to start. It's kind of, you know, I mean, that's kind of the way the game's thinking went, you know, philosophy, something. To me, that's embarrassing.
You
know,
do you think they want to do it, or do you think they have to do it? Or is it somewhere
between? I think it's in between sometimes. Yeah. You know, I think if everybody had, you know, good four solid starters they could count on, they could do it. But, you know, why is it so different than it used to be, you know? Because eventually, I mean, that's this time of year anyway, your bullpen's beat up because, you know, that's just the nature of the game nowadays. Now you add that to them. Yeah, and everybody's right, you know, getting through on adrenaline, whatever. But you know, it's hard to send, you know, three or four relievers out there every night and hope that they're all good to get away, let alone nine innings worth of it.
But that's the thing, is that you guys have the guys, and we've already shown it. All right, we can go a third time through the order, the Quintanas, you know, those sort of Severinos, those sort of guys.
Well, it's amazing if you give them a chance, what they can do.
Well, right.
You know?
You were a third time through the order guy. You would keep your starter in, right?
Well, yeah, if they're good, why wouldn't you?
Yeah,
you know, if the score's in your favor, where you have a little breathing room, you're crazy not to, because you know somebody's suffering. Those poor guys down the bullpen are the ones suffering.
Yeah. Well, I think that's also being next to Carlos, and you're the same way. It's the feel of All right, now we're coming up to the third time through the order. How do we feel about that guy? How do we feel like he's performing on the big stage? Because you don't know how the guy coming in is going to perform on the big stage, right?
Right. No, you don't. But, you know, I think you almost have to approach the postseason, you know, what got us here, right? Our starting pitcher, the strength of our starting pitcher. And one thing they can, it's not like they're all five inning, five and dive guys either. You know, no. They proved over and over they go six, seven, eight innings, you know, Manaea, Severino, Quintana's been unbelievable. He caught a second wind a couple months ago, and Peterson, you know, and Petey, man. So we got four guys right there, you know, that, hey, on any given night, they can shut you down, man, and they're durable. You know, you look at them, they're big, strong dudes, too.
Oh, yeah.
They're not these fragile guys.
No.
So that helps them, too. And you know, once they started doing it, you know, then they expect to do it. But, I heard Davey Johnson, when he was managing this team back in the 80s, my first year in 84, he told me one time, because I was a catcher, you know, and he said early in the season, you know, if one of our starters gets in a jam, or even one of our relievers, I give them a couple times to get out of it, right? And if they do, I know I got something. If they don't, they can't say a word next time I take them out, right? Because I've given them that opportunity. I said, that's brilliant. That sums up right there, you know, because you early in the season, you can afford to do that, but you find out something about those guys, and that's what we've been able to do here, and those guys.
You saw that with these guys early on. Yeah.
But until we gave them a chance to, you never really know.
Yeah, it's true. And so I know you got to get going and hit fungos. But
I'm the fungo master.
You're the fungo master. What is it like to be a – we talk about being a bench – but what's it like to be a bench coach in the championship series?
Rob, I've really enjoyed this job. You know, I was raised in a middle-class family. Since I can't, you've heard that, but the vice president's kid. I was born and raised in middle class. No, you know what? The pressure's definitely not on the bench coach like it is. But I'm saying sometimes, you know, in this job, you can obviously slow the game down, right? Because your mind's still cranking, but it's not going a mile a minute like the manager. So you kind of see things a little bit differently. I think, see the big picture just a little bit differently. Because, you know, the manager, you start laser focusing on certain areas, you know. So from that angle, you know, put it this way, probably enjoy the game more.
No. Right?
Yeah. And you can relax more as a bench coach, there's no question about it. But you still better be on your toes if he's got something he wants to ask you. He needs some info like that. But I've really enjoyed it. You know, it was almost a perfect job for me to come back to, you know, and couldn't ask for work for a better guy than Mendy, you know, and a better group of players, man. These guys have been pretty cool.
Well, the good thing is that the team you're going up against, they have some big cannons, but they don't necessarily have more cannons.
That's right. And it's the late, great Frank Howard.
Yep. Whoever has the most cannons. But you know what? You can have a lot of big cannons, but if you have more cannons,
you're going to win the war. But you may win. The other guys may win a battle or two, but you ain't winning no war.
All right, there you go.